So we've got an assignment due tomorrow, right? I'm sure everybody's really enjoying that. All right, yesterday I talked about the fact that there are a couple of different selection strategies for where to allocate. Right, there's first fit, next fit, best fit. Often the choice actually matters. In the case of memory allocation, it doesn't change the fragmentation story in which one you do, and fragmentation is the major issue. In the case of disk allocation, it could change latency concerns a lot. And we'll get to that when we talk about disk allocation. All right, here's the buddy system idea. Tim, you got the chalk again.
And that's it. Should I take a look at our classroom?
No, but actually, if you might be kind enough to run down to the CS office, because they have some down there, that would be a big help. All right, so here's the idea of the buddy system. We're going to have some least size, right, which is, I don't know, 2 to the k bytes. Doesn't really matter what the superscript is. Okay. And for simplicity, we can generalize it more than this. But let's start from the assumption that the total memory is some power of 2, and that, of course, k is hopefully less than total. If k is greater than total, we're going to have interesting problems. And we're going to start with an empty memory, and we're going to go to allocate. And what we're going to do is very, very simple. We're going to say, have I hit the right size yet? And you've hit the right size when either you're not permitted to split anymore, or if you were to split again, you'd end up with something that's too small to use. Okay, so the idea here is, if I have something that's a megabyte and I'm trying to allocate 64 kilobytes, okay, say, a megabyte is still too big, because if I were to split it, I'd get 512 and 512, and the 64K still fits fine in the 512K. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to take this 512K part, I'm going to split it again, and that's going to get me 2 chunks of 256K. Excuse me. The initial split got me 512 and 512. These guys are 256. So now I'm going to do it again. And by the way, if I have multiple free chunks of size 256, it absolutely doesn't matter which one I subdivide. I just got to pick one. They're both equally free. So now I'm going to split this one, right? And now I've got 2 chunks that are 128K, right? If this one, sorry, I split the top one without drawing another layer. Okay. Well, I can still split one more time and be okay. So what I'm now going to do is I'm going to split the bottom one. And I'm going to pick either one of these. Again, it doesn't matter. And now I've got a chunk that's the right size I was looking for, which was 64K, and I'm going to take that. Thank you. Now, what about if the size I'm looking for is not a power of 2? And there's sort of generically two strategies you could use. One is to say, well, this splitting strategy is only ever going to give me powers of two, so I should round up to the next power of two, and that should be the size I should look for. Okay. So what happens if I do that? Think about what's going to happen in the in the fragmentation. So suppose I'm allocating random size objects, right? This is the horrible assumption that I told you about that all memory allocation stories start with, and it's garbage because there are no random size objects. But suppose I were allocating random size. So how much do I have to sort of think about when I'm asking a question about fragmentation? So the answer is, imagine I was going to allocate 61k. So I'm going to end up with some kind of a block, and this block is a 64k block. And at the end of it, I'm going to have some unused space. Because I really wanted 61k and I hadn't read it. Now, what's the largest amount of unused space that I could possibly have in a 64k block?
Did you try to allocate 65?
No. It's a plausible story.
I was thinking of you. 31?
Why 31?
Because it's 32, which is the next one down.
So if I had 32, I'd only be looking for a 32k object, and I would have split again. Yeah, that's exactly right. One person either knew this already or actually read the book. So if I'm concerned about allocation and I'm looking at this 64k chunk, once I say I've allocated a 64k chunk, if I start with that assumption, then I know, you know what, I've done a confusing notation here because I've switched sides on which side I'm shading. Right? I know that once you tell me I've got a 64k chunk, I already know the low 32k must be used fully. Because if it wasn't, I would have split one more time. Now, if I tell you, first, that I have a 64k chunk, I've already made that commitment. And second, that I'm doing random size allocations. On average, how big is the allocation? Okay, so I know the lower bound is 32, actually. Well, 32 plus 1, right? 32k plus 1. I know the upper bound is 64k. That much is true. So given that I know these bounds, why, given a random allocation strategy, how do I know the answer has to be 48k on average?
Yeah. Well, that's just assuming it's a uniform random distribution.
Yes, generally, well, there's no such thing. Random distributions are not uniform distributions.
It's going to follow some distribution.
Yes. A random distribution is a different kind of distribution than the uniform distribution.
Oh, right. Sorry.
These are, just don't confuse the terms. But your intuition is right that it's going to follow a distribution, and the distribution has some properties. And indeed, the property we know about a random distribution is that on, and also separately that we know about the uniform distribution, is that on average, if you take a large number of random selections and you average them, random selections between two bounds, and you average them, or uniform selections between two bounds, and you average them, what you get is the midpoint. Okay, because if you didn't, they wouldn't have been randomly distributed. There would have been some weight in one direction or some weight in the other direction. Now, that could be because you had a bad random allocator, which is to say most of the ones that we actually work with in practice. But, okay, so on average, right, you're going to be at the midpoint of the variable component. In this case, with the funny analysis, because the range we're interested in for purposes of this, once the average question, is not 0 to 64k. It's not 0 to 64K because we already know the first half absolutely has to be committed. So whenever you have a situation where there's a fixed component and a variable component, and you're looking at a random allocation, that average is only over the variable component. Okay, so there's a magic dividing line here. Okay, and that says that the hypothetical, non-existent, never observed in the wild, average allocation is going to allocate 48K. So what's the fragmentation percentage? 48K of a 64K slot. So what do we know about fragmentation? If we do enough of them, it ought to be exactly 25%. Because the reason we know this is the variable part is half the block size. In this case, the block was 64K, but it doesn't matter what block size we use. Half the block size is necessarily fixed. So the variable part is the other half. The average for every given block size, for all block sizes, on average, we're going to allocate 3/4 of them, and the other quarter of them is going to go unused. And that's an internal fragmentation. Okay. Is there any external fragmentation in the buddy system?
I can't hear you.
No.
Why not? Everything is naturally aligned, everything sort of abuts with no waste, so there's no external fragmentation in this particular allocation. And it's been argued, although I think it's been argued incorrectly in kernels, that that this system is actually the best you can do. Particularly over repeated plays. Okay, so the thing about the buddy system is when the adjacent 64K, if I have one free and one allocated adjacent, and the allocated one gets deallocated, what we do is we recombine them into the larger block size. And so we very rarely end up in a situation viewed over a long haul. You can end up in a situation where if you have to allocate a lot of really large blocks, that can become tricky to do. But as long as you're allocating down towards the leaves of the space, you're likely to find blocks that are the size that you're looking for.
If you try to allocate first 64K and then 128K,
yeah,
will it skip the 64K piece in the middle and take the 128K?
You mean, will it skip these?
Will the first one, I'm assuming, one on the left will be taken by the first request for 64K?
One of these guys will be, yeah.
One of them will be. And then if it's one on the left, then I get a 128K request. Will the 64K with the middle one be taken?
Okay, so you're asking, could we end up with a picture like this, where
that might be
we took the low 64K, yeah, right? And then we had 128 here and 64 here, and is it possible that we could have taken this 128K? Is that what you're asking? The answer is no. In the buddy allocator, you have to take a naturally aligned component.
So is that...
That's what makes it the buddy allocator. So you can only take 128K at a 128K boundary.
So then is that not external fragmentation? Skipping
no.
That 64K middle?
No. No, because that space remains free for future allocations. Right? And free space doesn't count as fragmented space. Now, real memories, of course, are not convenient powers of two. People may install 16 megabytes of memory in their machine, right? But then there's that stupid BIOS ROM in the middle. And so it turns out the memory isn't nice and uniform. You get a little fragment at the bottom and a big fragment at the top. And what you do if you do that is, suppose I had a megabyte and a half. Then I can either think of it as a 1 megabyte buddy system plus a 0.5 megabyte buddy system, or I can think of it as 3 half-megabyte buddy systems. And the scene in green here is usually the increments in which you add memory are just so large relative to the increments in which you allocate memory that it doesn't much matter. And the story is that 25% is about where you're, sorry, question there?
Yeah, are there any heuristics that they use for picking where a piece should go to try and keep larger pieces free? Like, if you put a 64, you're going to put it maybe the first because it's all empty, and then the second 64 is going to go right next to it? So that, you know, you wouldn't put it in the 128 to the right at the bottom.
Certainly, if you already have a 64K hole, you're going to take that in preference to splitting something up.
Okay, so you always take the smallest hole you can find instead of splitting something that's fully free.
Yeah, and I think in general, the right heuristic is do as few splits as you can to get what you need.
Okay.
So if I had a 128K hole, I would split that in preference to doing multiple splits on a 1 megabyte hole.
So what it probably does is it takes the smallest sizes and searches up from them?
That's the intuition.
Okay.
Yes. And usually what you do is you augment this with a multi-size queue structure on the side so you know where to look. Okay. Now there's a hole in the story as I've told it, which is when I said there's a 25% fragmentation, I did not take into account that there are artifacts introduced by this least size. So if I were to tell you that the least size was 4 kilobytes, it turns out you have to allocate a lot of 16-byte objects. The fragmentation might well be larger than 25%. And if the least size were 4K, this isn't a very plausible general-purpose memory allocator, because in fact, we are going to get objects that are much smaller than 4K. There is some least size below which there's an intrinsic space overhead merely in keeping track of what's been allocated. And below that, pretending that you're going to allocate less isn't helpful. If you allocate 4 bytes, the memory allocator has some overhead so that later when you free that 4 bytes, it can figure out where it went. So that overhead has to get counted. Pragmatically, on a 32-bit machine, the least allocation that can actually be implemented is probably 12 bytes. Right, 4 bytes that you ask for, and then 2 bytes for some linked list management or something like that. Sorry, 2 words for some linked list management. You can't ask for less than 4 bytes because the alignment restrictions of the machine are going to force you up to a 4-byte boundary anyway. Right, so there's no point pretending that you can do less than 12 or 16 bytes. And if you were to say, hey, my least unit is 16 bytes, and if the least effective allocation, considering alignment, is 4 bytes, and then there's some overhead, we're back in the 25% story. Yeah.
So least size is the smallest amount you will split down to.
Yes. Okay. So you see the intuition for the allocator works. I'm going to switch topics now, but I want to leave a dangle for something I'm going to talk about tomorrow. So the fragmentation achieved with the buddy system allocator is about 25%. The fragmentation that's actually achieved with current state-of-the-art allocators is about 12.5%. That's total fragmentation, internal plus extra. And the theory would say, this buddy system is about the best we know how to do. And when the practice says we do a lot better, what this tells you is the theory wasn't modeling the right thing. Anybody got a thought as to what it was the theory got wrong?
The allocations aren't random?
The allocations aren't random. So you start from false assumptions. Logic is just a way to go wrong with high confidence. Okay. So if the allocations aren't random, if you don't get a uniform or a random distribution, the story for how to design your allocator actually changes fairly dramatically. In and your entire strategy for object layout changes. And tomorrow I'm going to talk about the slab allocator, which of course you've all read by now. Hint. Okay. I talked a little bit already about segmentation and relocation. I talked about this yesterday. Let me point out that there's a special case in which the buddy system, or frankly, just about any allocator, can get perfect results. Zero allocation, zero external and internal fragmentation. And that's the case where all the objects are the same size. If you knew what all the objects were going to be, and you knew they were all the same size, obviously you'd custom build a structure that does exactly that allocation. Why the hell would you allocate overhead? The problem with this segmentation story is the objects are variable size. And the problem with objects being variable size is when I go to store them, whether it's in memory or on disk, I have to find a place that will hold them. And if I have to find a place that will hold them, I have to deal with fragmentation issues. And if I have to do relocation, that's expensive. And it's expensive in memory, and it's horribly expensive on disk. Furthermore, it turns out that at the disk level, the minimal unit of allocatable space is already quantized. But disks allocate space in units of what are called sectors. And depending on the disk, the sector may be, on the older disks, 512 bytes, nowadays generally 1 kilobyte. But you can't address on the disk a unit smaller than a sector. So there are techniques for saying, well, I'm going to subdivide a sector. There's something called tail packing that RiserFS does. Right? It puts those last few bytes in the file and sort of packs them together into a single sector so that it reduces fragmentation. And this is important because it turns out those fragmentations really do add up. But as a general rule, you're looking in most file systems for no less than a sector as your unit of least allocation, and often actually larger than that. In modern file systems, you often go for 4 kilobytes. So it turns out that this segmentation idea is inconvenient. It's inconvenient because of this storage problem. It's also inconvenient for another reason. The segments, in addition to being variable size, have the constraint that they have to be contiguous. Right? You can't say, I'll put part of the segment down here and part of the segment someplace else. Right? It's all got to be nicely linear in its address. So, depending on who you believe, Burroughs with the B5500 or another group in Britain whose name I can remember and I don't remember the name of the machine, posed an alternative. Before I explain the alternative, let me also note, fragmentation, how important is it? It's a function of cost. Wasting 25% of something that's free doesn't hurt very much. Wasting 25% of something that you have in oversupply doesn't hurt very much. Wasting 25% of something that is really precious to you hurts a lot. So the incentives for fragmentation management changed a lot as the amount of memory available on machines changed. There was enormous pressure when segments were introduced not to waste any space that you could avoid wasting because you didn't have it. When the 286 came out and it could address a megabyte of real memory, that was a big deal. And nobody had that much memory on the machines. You waste 64 bytes here and 64 bytes there, it adds up pretty quickly when you've only got 512K. And that was loaded. You got more than that in your wristwatch there. Question there? No, okay. So, Burroughs proposed an idea that was considered at the time to be kind of dubious because of memory costs, but it was pretty obvious that memory costs were following Moore's law. And Burroughs bet on Moore's law. They said, look, Suppose what we do is we're gonna dodge the bullet on this allocation problem by making everything uniform. And let me describe this as a story about how you would evolve from segments. This is a hypothetical story, but it didn't happen this way. So what are the properties of a segment? Well, I said it has a base, and it has a, I think I called it a size, and the base is going to get added to an offset to form an effective address. Now, if we say all these segments are the same size, then we no longer have to record the size, right? It's a well-known number in the heart. So now what we're really saying is, any offset that you give me relative to this segment, right, I'm going to add a bias value to it, the base, and that's where I'm going to go. And so now, in some sense, if I look at my address, what happens is, this is the innovative part. Then I have some fixed number of bits down at the bottom. You choose a size that's power up to. I have some fixed number of bits down at the bottom that's always the offset part. Okay. And all of my other bits are now going to be the segment number, the index into my segment two. This actually is not so different from the way it looked before. Before, I also had a segment value that I would actually explicitly load it into a register, and then I would do an offset that was relative to that register. That register index, approximately speaking, was the segment. There's an extra level of indirection. Now, what's going to happen here if I take this view? So the innovation here is I'm going to take that segment register out. And I'm just going to use the segment number directly. Now what I'm going to end up with is a very large table. And each entry in this table holds a base value. And I'm going to use the segment number to index into this table. So I'm going to take the upper bits now, and I'm just going to use them as a table index to pick up this offset, this bias. And I'm going to add that to this offset. And that's how I'm going to get a physical memory address. Now, I'm going to add one more trick to this. I'm going to say not only are segments all the same size, but notice that if segments are the same size and if they're a power of 2, there is no advantage, in fact, there's disadvantages, if I allow them to be put in arbitrary addresses. Because if I allow them to be put in arbitrary addresses, now I'm going to get fragmentation issues again. So I'm going to say, not only are my segments all the same size, but I'm going to require them to be placed in memory at their natural alignment. So what that means is that my base is always some constant times the size. Because that's what it would mean for the address to be naturally aligned. Right? If I have a 4K thing, and I'm saying it's going to go at a 4K address, right? It means that address has to be multiple of 4K. Furthermore, because that address is multiple of 4K, I know that those positions that correspond to the offset positions, those bits have to be 0. because I chose a power of 2 for the size. Okay, so in fact, these base values have some unutilized bits down at the bottom, and we'll come back to this. This big table is a pain in the ass. Suppose I had a 32-bit address, okay? So 2 to the 32 bytes, and I told you that I'm going to use 4 kilobyte segments. And I happen to know 4 kilobytes is 2 to the 12. It would not be a bad thing to memorize powers of 2 between 2 to the 0 and 2 to the 32. You'll find yourself using them. So how many bits am I segment number? How wide is that field?
20 bits.
Why?
So you have 2 to the 20 meaning.
Because 32 minus 12 is 20, right? This is really higher order arithmetic. Yeah. So the intuition is if I have something that's 2 to the 12 bytes, and I'm going to represent that number in binary, and I know the size, I need log base 2 of the size. I need that many bits, okay? And so if I have log 2 of 2 to the something, basic logarithms. Okay, so what I know is this offset field is 12 bits, and this segment field is going to be 20 bits, and I know this because I told you it was a 32-bit address. So how big is this table, this base table? How big is each entry in the base table? How long is the base? Okay, he wants to go for 4 kilobytes. Can I fit the base in a byte? There actually is a good reason to hesitate here, but I will wager that none of you are hesitating for good reason. Come on, take a chance. How big is the base? What?
Does that depend on the size?
Depend on
the
size of what? If I tell you the address size is 32 bits, then I'm trying to produce a 32-bit number at the result. It's probably a safe bet that the base is going to be a 32-bit die. And the reason to hesitate, the good reason to hesitate is, in fact, I didn't tell you that the outcome was trying to be 32 bits. What I told you was the input was 32 bits. And there are designs in which this address size and the address size after translation might be different. And the Pentium is actually such a design in some modes. But if I told you the output address size was 32 bits, then the base value is going to be 32 bits. Well, more precisely, it's going to be 32 bits, ignoring the fact that I can't use these low bits. So conceivably, if enough of these low bits came out, maybe I could usefully shrink it. But in practice, it turns out I can't. So that's 32 bits is how many bytes? 4. How many entries are in this table? What's the index magnitude? How many bits in the index?
20
bits. If I have 20 bits in a number, what's the biggest value the number can represent?
2 to the
20. 2 to the 20. So how many entries are in this table? 2 to the 20. Times 4, which is 2 to the 2. And I happen to know, because I memorized my powers of 2, some time ago, the 2 to the 20 is 1 megabyte. Well, more precisely, it's, you know, 1 mega something, depending on what the unit is. In this case, it's 1 mega word, because the unit is the word. Okay. So the size of this table is 4 megabytes. This is an unattractively large number.
Isn't that assuming you'd have 2 to 20 entries? I mean, it might not be nearly that big.
Hold on. You're right. Hang on. Okay, let me unveil a lie. I've been calling this thing a segment number. So when this transition was made, they stopped calling these units segments. You started calling them pages. And because they were naturally aligned, the segment number becomes something called a page address. So the idea is exactly the same. I'm going to have a page address. It's going to be telling me which page in memory I'm looking for, and then I'm going to have an offset inside that page. And we're almost at a paging system. Not quite. So what's actually happened here, now let me talk about these slow bits that went missing. Okay, because since the offset part necessarily is going to occupy the low bits, I don't need those to store in the table. And because I don't need them, I get to reuse them for another purpose. Hardware is good at this kind of thing. We're going to do representation mapping. And one of the things that I could do is I could use them for an entry that would tell me whether this entry in the table is actually valid. The thing about most programs, I have a little bit of code, a little bit of data, I got a really, really big hole, and then I got a stack. Right? So one of the things that you get when you go to this table notion is you no longer have to fully populate the memory. You can set up the table with a couple of pages up here for text and data, and a couple of pages down here for stack. And the way you'll know that the other pages are missing is you will mark the table entries not valid. And a consequence of this is, remember I said you couldn't build a hole in the middle of the segment? Now you can build a hole by marking those middle entries not valid. And that hole, it doesn't have to be just one hole, right? Basically, you can mark regions valid one page at a time. I should also say, segment number became page address, and people stopped calling them segments. They started calling them pages. So this is just an indirection table. It's a lookup table. The problem is it's a big lookup table. So your intuition that a lot of these entries are unutilized is absolutely right. In fact, the majority of them are unutilized. This is talking about a 4 gigabyte span. There are programs that use that much memory, but there aren't very many of them. You haven't run them in the last year, I would wager. Unless you're doing some fairly unusual physics modeling. If you do bomb simulation, you run programs this big. If you do weather simulation, you run programs this big. Right? If you play Doom, you do not run programs this big. Sorry. There are a few other problems that really are this big. You track all of the effects of all the global markets, try to do it all at the same time. You run programs this big, maybe bigger. All right, so look, most of this table is unpopulated. And so if most of this table is unpopulated, we'd really sort of like to come up with some clever trick not to happen. There's no reason to say several thousand times in a row, nothing here. Right? What you'd really like to say is, these thousand entries, there wasn't anything in them, so I just took them out. So do we know a trick that would let us do that? Really want to get to the punchline. We've got about 3 minutes. So do we know a trick that will let us do that? Yeah.
Could we put a couple entries that have something in the offset area that says, you know, this is a this is the size of the table, and then instead of the page address, we put what the size actually is?
You could, but the cost of that is you'll no longer be able to do a direct offset into the table. So you're thinking, in effect, you could do some kind of link chaining sort of mechanism. And you could, but the cost of that is you now have to do linear search in the table. So it's possible, but we're not going to do it. What else can we do? Okay, guys, there are only three tricks in the entirety of computer science. You can change somebody's name. You can reduce the strength of the operation, like you can multiplies and adds, or you can add levels and indirection. Everything else is just some combination of these three tricks.
Have another lookup table.
Have another lookup table. Any thoughts on what a convenient size would be for this lookup table? Because if we add another lookup table, in effect, what we're going to do is we're going to divide this table into chunks. And those chunks are going to be powers of 2. Do we have a convenient looking power of 2 staring us in the face? Really nice if we could reduce this chunk in units of pages. Because think about what's happening in one of these entries here. The way to think about this entry is, right, it's a pointer to a page. This table is going to have to be stored in pages anyway, because we've said pages are the fundamental unit of allocation in the system. So, sitting underneath this in the hardware, right, there's a view that actually there are pages under here. How many?
2 to 20.
I hope not.
2 to 10.
How do I know that? Well, this is 2 to the 22. Page size is 2 to the 12 bytes, right? So 2 to the 22 is 2 to the 10 times 2 to the 12, right? We're going to see powers of 2 ad nauseum. We're also going to see a lot of powers of 16. Two to the 10 is going to turn out to be a very convenient number. Because when I build the next layer of data, what I'm saying is that I need 2 to the 10 entries. Furthermore, I know that each of these entries must be able to name a page. Specifically, it has to name the relevant page of the first table. And if I have a 32-bit address, how big do those entries have to be? Oh, this is really bad. Come on, you answered this question like 10 minutes ago. You can't have forgotten already. Maybe you can. If you can forget this in 10 minutes, we're in the wrong place. How many bytes is 32 bits? Come on.
4.
So how big are these damned entries going to be?
4 bytes.
How many of them I got? In that table on the left, how many of them by that?
2 to the 10.
So how big is this table?
12.
See anything else here that's conveniently 2 to the 12 bytes?
Offset.
Offset. Yes, an offset. No, an offset is not 2 to the 12 bytes. 12 bits. Good try. A page! Now, so these things are page addresses. And because they're page addresses, that means that their low bits have to be zero. And that means that I can reuse them. And that means that I can say, oh, I can stick a valid bit in there. What it means to say, this entry not valid? I'm saying, there aren't any entries down here. One of the really nice things about storage allocation is you don't have to allocate storage for things you're not planning to store. So what we're going to do is we're going to have two levels of indirection. And I'm going to have to come back to this tomorrow because I've run over. Let me give you the punchline. We're now going to take this page address. We're just going to divide it in two. We're going to take 10 of the upper bits, 10 bits in the middle, and 12 bits for the offset, which conveniently summed to 32. We're going to use the upper bits as an index into the first 10. To find a page that's one component of the second 10. We're going to use the next 10 bits to indicate into this, to index into this page. That's going to get us the result page. Then we're going to use the offset to index into that.
So the middle 10 are essentially an offset?
The middle 10
are an offset combined with the left table?
The middle 10, no, because the left table is not indexing big units. The left table is indexing smaller units. So one way to think about the middle 10 is, yes, you can think of them as an offset into this intermediate table, but it's not an offset in bytes. It's an offset in entries. Probably better to think about it as an index and not get it confused with the page offset. Let me just throw out the terms. In the most of the hardware literature, that page-sized unit is called a page table, and that thing is called a page directory. A directory is simply a table of tables in this context. That turns out, if we had bigger addresses, we're going to do this trick more. So there may be more than two levels, and the page table, page directory terminology becomes very awkward. And at that point, people start talking about what level of page table you're looking at. But it's the same idea. I'm going to come back to this because there's more tricks because we still have some spare bits to use. And you will find that people with the operating systems love packing bits.